Technology, it's such a big part of our lives. It can be fun, it can be convenient, just like this podcast, which is why University of Missouri Healthcare is proud to support podcasting on KBIA. Technology can also save your life. That's why so many people turn to University of Missouri Healthcare. Its hospitals and clinics offer you the latest technology, plus a medical team whose skill and knowledge are unparalleled. You know technology makes everyday life a lot better. Well, it's true for your healthcare, too. University of Missouri Healthcare, the care you deserve from the team you trust.
Hello, and welcome to Under the Microscope, KBIA's weekly look at stories in science, health, and technology. I'm Raymond Hungacar. School gardens are on the rise in the U.S., offering educators a chance to teach students about math and science through hands-on experience. But growing fruits and veggies isn't child's play. Payne Roberts reports for Harvest Public Media on the challenges associated with sustaining a school garden.
In Lawrence, Kansas, asparagus is a hot commodity.
The demand for asparagus was and it continues to be very, very strong.
That's John Pendleton. Adorned in a matching green hat and apron, he's selling homegrown produce at the Clinton Parkway Nursery Farmers Market in Lawrence. Pendleton's Country Market is a staple at area farmers markets and has been selling locally grown food for more than 30 years.
Thanks for coming out today.
Several stands down, the competition. Three middle school students are selling potatoes, cucumbers, and an array of herbs that were all grown in their school garden. Perry Kennard, a 7th grade science teacher at Southwest Junior High in Lawrence, oversees this garden. It's their second summer in the market, but this year they tried something new, asparagus.
We're hoping to expand the variety that we can offer and the experience that we have for our kids and for our community.
So is there an asparagus war boiling in Kansas? Pendleton says no. The school gardens won't really harm his business, but he has felt an impact.
A particular restaurant might not be taking that much stuff, but if you take three or four restaurants and pool it together, then it makes it worthwhile to make a delivery. And if all of a sudden they're buying from the kids because it's the politically correct thing to do, then, you know, that we maybe have lost a market that way.
Unexpected competition is one challenge communities must face when it comes to school gardens. The number of these projects in the U.S. has exploded in popularity over the past decade. That's according to the National Farm to School Network. These programs typically operate by student and volunteer labor with funding from donations and grants. Most often, the produce is used in school cafeterias. But because the growing season doesn't coincide with the school year, the question of how to most effectively use school gardens in the summertime is often a concern. Here's Pendleton again.
They start off with saying, yeah, we can run it through the school kitchens and things like that. But when you realize that the majority of the produce that they raise isn't during the school year.
To curb the amount of produce sold at the farmers market, Southwest Junior High offers a CSA program for parents and faculty, and it donates some food to the school cafeteria. However, because the growing season peaks during the summertime, less than 10% of that food is served at the school. Summertime also causes difficulty when it comes to enlisting labor assistants, leaving the work to volunteers and teachers.
One of the advantages of being a teacher is that you have your summers off. Well, I don't have my summers off anymore.
And that burden isn't reduced once the school year returns, as teachers then must cultivate their gardens and their students.
Listen, it's very easy to get into this well-intended but not understand the amount of labor involved.
That's Stephen Ritz, a teacher and administrator from the South Bronx who advocates nationwide for school gardens. Ritz said school gardens are more successful today because educators tie them to academics, as compared to the traditional model, where gardens were used as an excuse to move classes outdoors in pleasant weather.
Now we're talking about percent germination. We're talking about reading. We're talking about writing. We're talking about documenting the process. We're talking about math. We're talking about making connections. We're talking about the whole process, as opposed to just being out there and digging in the dirt.
The National Farm to School Network expects the number of school gardens to increase. For now, there appears to be plenty of room for them at farmers markets, as the market for locally grown food increases. But as any gardener can attest, overcrowding can stunt growth. For Harvest Public Media, I'm Payne Roberts.
Last fall, after the drought had killed off most of the competition, a certain weed took advantage of the opportunity to germinate and flourish. As KSMU's Jennifer Davidson reports, the thistle is now hurting productivity on many Missouri farms.
Tim Schnockenberg can tell you pretty much anything you need to know about the soil as it relates to Missouri crops. His phone at the MU Extension office in Lawrence County has been ringing off the hook with farmers complaining about the pesky invasive weed. It has several forms. Musk and bull thistles are common here.
It's mainly a problem in pastures and hay fields where we're trying to produce feed for cattle. You know, if cattle come up on a thistle, they'll go make a beeline around it.
That's because it has serious thorns, and so that acreage ends up being unusable. Cows can't graze there, and crops can't grow. And many farmers have had the unexpected cost of trying to get rid of the thistles, affecting productivity and a farmer's bottom line. Schnockenberg says there are really three options for people battling the thistles.
Some will go out and they'll dig them. They'll take a shovel or a pickaxe or something like that and try to dig them out and try to get them as deep as they can, get their roots. But with the sheer volume that we've had in some fields, that's just not always practical.
Others have tried mowing over them. But for mowing to be effective, farmers have to time it perfectly. They have to mow just before the purple seed head opens up, and they'll have to mow again several times in the following weeks. But the best way to control the thistle is also the last resort, and it's what Don Prophet is doing at his beef cattle farm in Pottersville, Missouri. Prophet opens the chain on the metal gate leading to the field he broadcast sprayed. That means he sprayed herbicide on the entire field instead of just a few select spots because the thistle was so widespread.
This is the first year that we've, you know, really broadcast sprayed thistles, and I'm really, really pleased with the results so far.
As Prophet's red cattle surround our truck, we drive to a corner of the field where a couple of thistles have survived. Prophet says the weed killer itself isn't expensive, but time and labor can be. He hires a farmhand to help him in the fields. About 30 years ago, the USDA and the University of Missouri released weevils, tiny white worms that went to work attacking the flower head of the thistle. And now they're in every county, says Tim Schnockenberg.
I shudder to think about if we didn't have the weevils, just how many more thistles we would have had.
The thistle is also causing some drama between neighbors, Schnockenberg says. That's because while some farmers are diligently trying to fight off the thistle in their own fields, others are just letting them go, which allows seeds to float through the air and germinate in a neighbor's land. Missouri law says landowners must control all thistles each year to prevent them from going to seed. For KSMU News, I'm Jennifer Davidson in Pottersville, Missouri.
And that'll do it for this week's Under the Microscope. I'm Raymond Tungakar. Thanks for listening.